What's up, everybody? It's Bark After Dark. I'm Jake. He's Jake. We're from Dogs HQ, and this is a deeply unserious show where we will be talking about nothing of any real consequence except for our guest, Sean Callahan. He's going to be on with us, Husker Online, one of the model sites in this entire industry that we toil away in. He does such a great job, man, and it is one of the best dudes there is, one of the best dudes ever. And we got some stories to talk about with him. But Roos, before we bring Sean on, what's going on with you, man?
Man, looking forward to, as much as I love Bark After Dark, I'm looking forward to getting this one done because I'm going on vacation after this one. And so I'm going to take off for the next couple of days, try to get this in before the season really gets underway, have a little chance to disconnect. We'll talk a little bit about that later on.
Yeah. Can't spell vacation without Jake Roos. It's verified. I can't remember last time you took one. So enjoy yourself, buddy. Let's bring Sean on. Sean's probably seen some guys go on vacation over the years, on and off. Sean, what's going on with you, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Yeah, when you get to my chair, you don't take too many vacations. You take your laptop on vacation.
Yeah.
And working from a lobby bar is like considered vacation at a hotel.
Yeah, I know that feeling well. I've done that move many times. I'm actually going somewhere specifically without Wi-Fi or cell service for that reason, Sean. So I'm forcing myself to kind of leave it all behind.
My last two vacations, we were in Hawaii for spring break. You know, university's on spring break. The schools are all on spring break. What could actually happen? Well, the athletic director left for Texas A&M.
Yeah.
And I woke up to 57 messages on my phone because of the time difference. And then I went to Colorado in July, same type of deal, right after the 4th of July. No one's going to break news. Our defensive backs coach at Nebraska resigned when I was driving up the mountains in Denver. The running joke is when I do leave town, something bad usually happens in Nebraska.
Commitments normally for the Georgia side of things. That seems to be how it goes for our beat guys over here. Sean, wanted to kind of start this off. It's the way we start off everybody that we bring on Bark After Dark. We admit that we don't do a ton of research. We're not very good journalists when it comes to our people that we bring on. So we want your backstory, man. Like Jake was saying, Husker Online, a monster in the industry of fan sites, the recruiting world. I'm curious, though. Tell us the Sean Callahan story, man. Nobody wakes up to Husker Online being there one day. So how did you get started? How did it all come to be? Where do you start from and how do you find yourself here?
Yeah, it's obviously a long path, but you know, I think timing is a big part of things. I mean, when I was an athlete in high school and was not going to play in college. And I knew I was going to get into sports journalism and this is what I wanted to do, but there's a lot of people that want to get in this job. As you know, it's not easy to crack into. So when I went down to the University of Nebraska to start my freshman year, I kind of treated it like I was taking on a new sport and you got to like practice and get to know people and whatnot. So I was hired for the Daily Nebraskan and I did writing for a local paper. And I was one of the sports directors for the college campus radio station right as I began my freshman year. Within the first month of college, I had those jobs. So I got a credential to covering games in the press box. We were actually in the radio booths doing pregame shows for student radio. And that was my first week in college. I mean, so I was very fortunate at the time to get going. And then at the end of the semester, the sports editor of the Daily Nebraskan, Sam McEwen, who's now the sports editor of the Omaha World Herald. We had a really good student paper back then. He goes, "Hey Sean, we're going to put you on this recruiting beat mainly because nobody wants to do it." So I was a recruiting writer for the student newspaper, which I'd like to know how many papers had that at a college campus. And we were a daily. We printed 5 days a week back then, Monday through Friday, pre-cell phone, pre-Twitter, everything. So, you know, your Twitter on your phone or your whatever you were looking at, it was the student paper. So it was a pretty prominent publication when I was in school. And I covered recruiting. And then during that path, I came across Jeremy Crabtree at Rivals. And I started emailing him just some questions like, "Hey, about Nebraska prospects." And he was in Kansas City, about 3 hours from where I'm at. And he's like, "Hey, I actually kind of need a part-timer. I need a guy that can help me. And we have a budget. And Bobby Burton is a guy that works here. And you'd work with me and Bobby and Jeff Ketchum at that time." Jeff Ketchum was in their office. They were in a little office in Austin, Texas. And so I got hired by Jeremy Crabtree as a part-timer when I was 19 years old and started working and calling recruits. And there was no Nebraska websites, I mean, of prominence. There were some message boards, but there was no like organized coverage on the internet. It was just kind of message board stuff. And, you know, I was really one of the first online people, and all of that kind of began the path to where I was at. I did radio daily. I started giving live Husker practice reports on the radio beginning in the year of 2000. So every day I've been on Omaha radio in the 5 o'clock hour since the year 2000, giving a live Husker practice report or recap. And, you know, at that time there was no live coverage because there wasn't, you know, camera phones and things like that. So that report at five something every day. And the host of that show was a gentleman named Kevin Kugler. I don't know if you guys know who that is. He's NFL on Fox. He was partnered with Mark Sanchez last year. Now he's with Moose Johnson, but he did a host. So I was on the show with him. So, you know, I was blessed to work with some really, really good people. And then when I graduated college, an opportunity came to become a writer for the Husker site on Rivals. And then that was 03. Then by 07, I became the publisher. And then we split ways with the magazine company, Rivals did, and the Husker Online name came into play, I believe, in 2010 or 2011. So we've had the same thing going, but it, you know, I just got going at the right time. There was nobody else. People always ask, how did you get your job? I go, well, no one had the job before I had it. That's the thing that's hard to explain. I've kind of just kind of created the position. And now, you know, we have obviously a YouTube channel. I'm on radio every day. I'm on local television five nights a week. I do 50 public speeches. I just finished my second book. So I've been blessed to cover and get to do a lot of different. I got one boss, and it's my wife, and I guess my two daughters now too. But other than that, I'm just, you know, getting to do what I love to do.
Man, that's such a great story, and you've done a phenomenal job, and it's fun to watch. I do want to ask you about the team you cover. I think all of us, or most people out there, have like a little attachment to the Tom Osborne Nebraska teams. I mean, I know I do. I mean, I got an ESPN deal, you know, like a little commercial for ESPN talking about that Nebraska Florida game. The Tommy Frazier thing was as my favorite moment ever in college football. I mean, Nebraska was so good, and there was a charm to it because it was Lincoln, Nebraska, and it was the triple option, and it was just everything that was really cool about college football in those days. But since then, you tried to kind of make another run or two, you know, just in a couple years spurts. But what is that like for Nebraska fans to kind of look back on that as kind of where they were at the very top of the sport and now just trying to get back there?
Yeah, they were so innovative. And I don't think a lot of college football fans realize all the things that Tom Osborne did, you know, to kind of get them where they're at. In 1969, he convinced Bob Devaney, the legendary coach he succeeded, to hire a strength coach. There were no athletes for any sport lifting and training weights. They implemented an off-season lifting program by that point. You know, you go back to 1968, they were blown out by Oklahoma. In 1969, after a year of training and doing all these things, they blew out Oklahoma. Then in 70 and 71, they won back-to-back national titles. Tom Osborne implemented the first training table, the first nutrition program, where they actually like were looking at what they were feeding the athletes. He implemented the first academic program where they actually had academic advisors and counselors monitoring the players and their grades. And that led to the most academic All-Americans in all of college athletics by implementing that structure. So you can go down the line of all the things that he thought of, you know, early in his career that, you know, changed college athletics. And he was just always one step ahead. And even as an athletic director, you think about this move now. In 2010, he led the move to get Nebraska to the Big Ten. They would have been in the Big 12 still. And who knows if he's not there to lead that discussion. If Nebraska doesn't get into the Big Ten, you know, I'll tell you this much. You don't want to be in the ACC or the Big 12 right now. I mean, when you look at the revenue gaps that are coming in college athletics. So he always just had the gift of being one move ahead and understanding, you know, the innovation to get ahead of the curve, even with his offenses and the things that he did. I mean, Turner Gill was one of the first true dual threat quarterbacks back in the 80s. And that created one of the most explosive offenses in college football history. So he always just had a feel to stay one step ahead of everybody, called every play at Nebraska from 1969 to 1971. He called every, or excuse me, till 1997. So from 69 to 97, he called every single play at Nebraska.
Unbelievable. Sean, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, because I've heard this, but I think you're the man to verify it for me. I've heard, now you got to understand, I live right on the Georgia-Tennessee line, super small town, 400 people in the whole town, itty bitty. There's a bar I hang out regularly. Got three Nebraska diehard fans there. Come in, they got their gear on, they've got the stuff on the cars, the whole thing. I've heard that it runs a little different out there. I've heard that on Saturdays when the Huskers are playing, stuff shuts down, and which is not necessarily the case out this way. I'm just curious, is that accurate? And what is that like, man? I mean, what is it? I've heard it's just like a ghost town. If you go to the grocery store, that's what's playing over the speakers, not the music, right?
Yeah, that's an accurate description. I mean, when you would go to the grocery store on a game day, the game would be blaring on the speakers in the entire grocery store. And right. I remember that growing up, going to the store when I wasn't doing this job yet, but everybody kind of just shuts down. Like, you don't schedule your wedding on a Husker football Saturday. And if you do, you better expect a lower list of attendees, or worse, your wedding reception party might turn into a watch party. And that happens. I mean, I've seen people at funerals have a little earpiece. I mean, it is a way of life out here for a lot of people. And, you know, you think about Nebraska as a state, it's, other than West Virginia, it's the smallest populated state in the Power Four right now. And, you know, when you draw a 500 mile circle around it, they have the fewest 4- and 5-star recruits here of any Power Four school. And yet the expectations here are just as high as Georgia and Alabama and other places. So there is a deep history here, you know, and people really care about this. I mean, when you go to church after a Husker win or loss, you can tell. I mean, people are up or down on Sunday the next day based on how that football game goes. And attendance at Mass is pretty easy to tell, too. There might be a couple people that take it off on Sunday morning because they're so upset about the game still from Saturday. And Matt Rhule, I think, has really done a good job so far of embracing that and understanding the importance of this team to the entire state.
Well, he did the improbable, I think, what most folks would have thought improbable 2 or 3 years ago, by getting Dylan Raiola to eventually land at Nebraska. What has the reaction there been like? I mean, does it concern you at all from the outside kind of looking in? I mean, obviously, I know you're enthralled in the program every day, but does it concern you at all, maybe the expectations that might get put on a kid like that? Because, I mean, obviously, Georgia fans thought the world of him, and you know, they fought tooth and nail about his ranking and all of that stuff as he was kind of sliding in the rankings a little bit. And then they, you know, they lose him, and then now it's just even ramped up even more, I feel like, with the legacy there. That's got to be tough on a kid.
Yeah, his maturity, though, I've never seen a guy his age come in being able to handle it, and he's cool as a cucumber at all times.
Yeah.
And his work ethic, and I've never seen a young guy come in like he has and command the respect he's already commanded. I mean, he flew 5 of the receivers down to Texas to work out with Jeff Christensen, the same guy that trains Mahomes down there, and paid for him to stay and fly out there to work out. He takes the O-line out for pizza. I mean, so he's unique in that sense, but it's his arm talent. I mean, they brought in 2 highly touted transfer portal receivers from Wake Forest in Texas. And when those receivers saw Dylan Raiola throw a football, that was all they needed to see to come here. And you know, Jamal Banks from Wake Forest, he visited Michigan, Notre Dame, Wisconsin, you name it. And Dylan Raiola was why he picked Nebraska, to get the chance to play with them. I mean, I have never seen a young quarterback come in with the arm talent and physical tools that he has right now. It's a matter of, can they protect him? I think the receivers are going to be elite for Nebraska from where they've been. But the O-line obviously will be a question early because they're not going to run him like some of the quarterbacks we've seen here in the past. He can run, though. Don't fool yourself, but they're not going to run him loose and expose him, because obviously he's a big part of what they're going to do in this program moving forward.
So we ask the last questions to everybody that comes on. I wanted to get mine out of the way before Roos, because mine's a little bit more on the downy side. So, you know, that way Roos can kind of come in and uplift a little bit. So, hey, Sean, let's say, you know, you're having that out-of-body experience, right? You've just passed on to the wherever you go after you die, and you get a chance to pick who eulogizes you at your own funeral, who gets to say the last words about Sean Callahan. Who you picking?
God. Well, if he's still alive, I mean, the guy that works for me, Steve
Sipple. He can be dead or alive.
Is who I probably – and he works for me now, and he was the 25, 30-year columnist from the Lincoln Journal Star, but I talk to him as much as anybody, and he knows me as well as anybody on a day-to-day basis now. So probably Sipple. He's a writer. I'm sure he'd write something pretty poetic and get everybody really teared up. So yeah, that would be my call. I guess I'd go with Sipple, a guy that works for me right now.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, like you said, Sean, you've been in this business a long time, and we all know that that comes with its fair share of travel. And so my question to everybody is, what is the worst hotel room that Sean Callahan has ever stayed in?
Oh, man. Well, I'm trying to think. There was one time, John Tallman, who used to work on my side.
We know Johnny Tallman.
And we were doing a speech in a community. And I'll, out of respect to those people, and I don't want to say where, but it was on the western edge of the state of Nebraska. And the radio station was like, yeah, we're just going to give you guys a free room at one of our sponsors. And usually it's kind of like a respectable, it's like a Hampton Inn or just something like, yeah, this is great. And we get to this place, and I couldn't even tell you what the name of it was, but it was one where you parked your car and entered like outside, and they had John's name down as Ron Paulman instead of John. And I go, red flag number one. And we get in there and we see the room, and I asked the guy, do you guys have Wi-Fi? And the front desk guy just laughed at me. And I just said, John, let's get out of here. And we ended up checking into like a Hampton Inn or something a mile away, just because we weren't able to get any work done or anything. But I'm trying to think. Some of the places, I mean, I was a scout one summer for Adidas camps for Mike Minter's company called the Recruits Unlimited. And I did the whole summer, 50, 60 nights in hotel rooms. And we stayed all over. I mean, it was, there were definitely some interesting places and things that we did that summer, but it was over 20 years ago. So it's hard to recall, but sure. Usually we try to stay in a somewhat of a reputable brand now when we go on the road, because you can't really when you get old like this, you can't afford a bad night's rest.
No doubt.
That's the truth. Sean, we appreciate you, man. Thanks for your time, and good luck this season, dude. I hope it's a lot of fun for you guys.
Yeah, I know you guys are gonna have a great year at Georgia, and you're my early pick. You and Ohio State should be an interesting year to see how things play out.
Tell them to invite the Bulldogs out to Lincoln sometime, man. That would be a fun game. I think that'd be a great crossover for everybody.
Nebraska's supposed to play Tennessee in a couple years. We'll see if that series happens.
So, oh, man. That'd be fun. That'd be a place I'd love to get out to Lincoln. I'd love to go see it.
We'd love to have you. If we got you, and we've played you in some Gator Bowls. And
yes.
Yeah,
and Capital One Bowls, but it'd be nice to get a game in Lincoln and Athens.
Absolutely,
it would, man. Take care. Appreciate it, Sean.
Thank you,
man. What a career!
What kind of a story? You know what's interesting to me about his story is I feel like we've heard it a couple times now, where people are like, I just ended up doing recruiting because nobody else wanted to do it.
Yeah, totally. It's definitely the entry-level job into this business. It's like, I don't know, but, you know, if you like it and you can stick with it and it entertains you, it doesn't drive you crazy. You know, you've got to be one of two things to cover recruiting. You've got to absolutely love the drama of it. Like, you've got to absolutely love it. Or you've got to just be the kind of person, and I think you and Rusty kind of fall under this thing, is it just kind of beads up and runs right off of you. You know, like it just never sticks to you in terms of what that kid told me or getting bad information.
That comes with time, though, right? I mean, like, that's ultimately, like, those first two or three years, man, like, I was on eggshells, dude, just trying to stay ahead of the game, or like, oh, why did this kid tell me this and he's going to do this? And, like, you know, after a while, you just become numb to it. And you're like, look, the game is what the game is. Like, you understand that, you know, yeah, of course you would like them to tell you the right thing all the time, but you know they're not going to. So, yeah, I agree with you in that sense. I think that if you can kind of fall into that mentality, then that's I mean, I love it. It's a great gig and it's a great beat to cover, because recruiting, there's always something going on. It's not like the team necessarily, although the team has become a little bit more 24/7 than when it started, or when I first got into it, I feel, you know, but the recruiting stuff, and there's always something to talk about when it comes to recruiting.
Always something to talk about. Little segment here, a little new segment, kind of hit me the other day. We miss Mike Leach, and this is going to be the name of a new segment where we look up a factoid, or we tell a story that we've heard, you know, kind of regurgitated. I've heard so many different Mike Leach stories that are amazing, all the way from, you know, him, you know, basically fronting as Vince Gill for a long time. At a Macon area Waffle House, and from that to what I heard today, listening to the Brian Russillo podcast, where a Washington State professor who worked with him on a book said, "You don't want to go anywhere with Mike Leach. He talks to everybody, and it's really tough to get in and out of places." Said he would call him at like midnight and be like, "Hey, we need to go over chapter 3 word by word."
Yeah, I love it, man. You know, I'm a huge Mike Leach fan, and because what I loved about Mike Leach is the personality. And I feel like so many of these guys have personalities, but they turn them off for the camera because they think that's like the you know, I got to be tough. I got to be hard in front of the camera. I got to set the standard. I'm the representative. Mike Leach just embraced his weird. And he was really successful, I think, for that reason. It endeared him to a lot of people. I'm sure it put some people off too, but it really endeared him to, I think, hundreds of thousands of people who never had a Mike Leach coach team, who never interacted with the guy. I mean, he was probably, for most of his tenure in college football, the guy that I think a lot of people would have picked to have had a beer with if they could have chosen a coach. Certainly for me.
Sure. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we miss him. I mean, we never even had an interaction with a guy that he was that kind of one of a kind, that he was that kind of magnetic. So I decided to look up a little factoid on Mike Leach. And the one thing that stood out to me, and I wanted to pose this as a question to you to see if you would get it right, but I'm having a hard time coming up with like geographical, parameters for this, because this is very off the wall. Do you know where Mike Leach's first head coaching gig is? I guess I'll just say it. If it's close enough, I'll say close enough.
I'm going to associate him with like the Texas area. I don't think.
And I really thought for a split second there you had looked this up before me in preparation, and you were about to be like, and just like be right on the money. I was going to call you out.
I don't know it. I don't. I mean, I'm associating that because of Texas Tech.
Well, he's born in California. He's got a Juris Doctorate from Pepperdine.
Right. And then I mean, Oklahoma.
BYU. He went to college at BYU.
Did he really?
Yeah. Went to school at BYU.
You a Mormon?
I reckon, man. I don't know.
Pepperdine, that's interesting because Pepperdine is a Church of Christ school. And so
I didn't know that about Pepperdine. I've seen the campus though, and it is right across the street from the Pacific Ocean
in Malibu, dude. It's sick.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know what the Church of Christ is up to, but if they want to sponsor Bark After Dark, they should.
Yes, he was raised according to Wikipedia. He was raised Mormon. No, Jake, his first head coaching career, it was probably going to be your second choice. He was the head coach of the Porty Bears in 1989, the American Football Association of Finland.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes. Yes, he was.
Oh, man. Wow. How apropos.
I know, right? That same year, he also struck up the deal with Hal Mumme at Iowa Wesleyan University as offensive coordinator. That's awesome. And then – Was at Valdosta State, Kentucky, all those different places where everybody got familiar with him. But yeah, some good Mike Leach stories. We'll jump in and out of this segment as we go on. I just, you know, I know that he, both Jake and I have a reverence for Mike Leach that we just thought would be kind of, you know, fun to instill into our show. Maybe even put it in the description at some point, you know, like, sure. Like, hey, listen, you know, RIP Mike Leach, or we miss you, Mike Leach, or whatever. All right.
I think we got to get a quickie in here, don't we?
Yeah, we do. So, hey, just time's running out. Time's running out. So be fast if you can.
Yeah. Hey, I'm always quick when I'm jaking off. I got one for you. I mentioned that I'm going on vacation this week, and I'm going to go off the grid a little bit. I'm going to have electricity. I'm told there's Wi-Fi there, but only really enough to check an email. You can't, like, watch YouTube, anything like that. So I'm curious, Jake Rowe, if you were given money and your family was set in that way, could you conceivably live off-grid, assuming you didn't have to work anymore?
Yeah, I could. I could. I don't think I would. I don't think I'd pick it. I don't think I would need a customized experience. You know, like, I would need, you know, there's a lot of nuance. There's something I would want to go a la carte. You know, if I've got the money to go off-grid, I assume that I've got the money to go kind of, yeah, pick and choose what I want to, you know, keep around.
All right.
You know, like, I don't want to be, like, have to be tied to my phone like I am for work, but I do want to be able to leave it alone for 3 or 4 hours at the time. That would be fun. You know, so,
yeah. Give, like, what I'm, no. What my proposal here is, like, could you give the phone up?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I could. I just don't want to.
I understand.
You know, I mean, I know a lot of people are like, oh, I wish I never had to see a cell phone again. Listen, I don't want to completely get rid of them. I remember what it was like before we had them, you know? Like, yeah. You know, it's kind of tough to get a hold of somebody. You know, it's kind of tough to figure out what was going on. And, you know, things happened. And
you make it sound like everybody was just wandering around bewildered all the time.
A little bit. What's happening? A little bit. You know, like, for me growing up, I could be 25 minutes away, 20 minutes away at Brett Mazzell's house in Axon, Georgia. And my mom had no idea.
Sure.
She had no clue unless I picked up a landline and called her. Like, these kids don't know.
I called my mom once on a payphone. I was going to be home like a half hour later, and I didn't have any change. So I called collect. And she was so damn mad at me about that. She was like, look, just whatever. Like, you were probably going to be in trouble for coming home half hour late, but I'm more upset that you called me collect.
I remember the call collect days. I definitely remember the call collect days. Dude, I remember waiting, you know, having your girlfriend in high school and just sitting there waiting by that cordless phone, waiting for that thing to ring so you could talk to her at night before you went to bed.
Sure.
Yeah. Good time.
Or the free texts and data minutes after 9 p.m. You remember that?
Yeah, no doubt. But hey, listen. What kind of problems did we think we had? You know, like, what kind of issues were we facing when we were that age? None.
No.
It blows me away. I look back on that all the time. I'm like, dude, I remember how I used to stress myself out about this.
I knew it. No. I knew it. I was, it's one of the things that in my life I'm kind of proud of. I knew in that moment how good it was. I was like, this is sick.
Yeah.
We are having a
lot of fun. I'm not saying I didn't know how good it was, but I also thought that there were, like, real issues facing me. Like, sure. I thought I had real problems.
I mean, like, when I was teaching, I told my kids, it was like, look, ride this thing is like, however hard it seems right now, it's going to get so much harder. You need to understand that to the core of your being.
Yeah. No doubt about it. That was some good times, man.
I look forward to giving you the report on when I come back, though, and seeing how I feel about my time away, I guess, as it were.
Yeah. I'd want to scroll sometimes, man. I'd want to scroll TikTok sometimes.
I don't want to do that. I mean, I feel like it's going to be good for me not to do that, is what I
should. It probably will. All right. So I was planning on asking you this when I first asked you this the first time. I believe I may have done it off air. So I knew I wanted to ask a follow-up question. What's the status of your microwave, and when will you be replacing it?
Oh boy, big question here. Something I'm sure a lot of people are interested in. They don't know really what's going on. Yeah, we talked about
if this. You're listening to this in podcast form, you're totally lost. If you've never watched this show, you're totally lost.
I have a white over the stove microwave that is featured in pretty much every thing that I do on Dogs HQ on YouTube. And because my office is my kitchen, and so it is on the fritz. I plugged it in yesterday. It worked for a little while. And then last night while I was asleep, it gave me that stupid beeping and the, you know, keyboard shorted, service needed thing. The reality is I've not needed it very much. And I've actually kind of used that to my advantage. I've tried to not do things that necessitate a microwave. And so am I going to replace it? Yeah, I'm going to have to, I think. Am I in any hurry to do that? No, I'm not. And I don't know when that will happen. I don't really want to spend the money to do it. I really just don't use the thing. I would like to almost replace it and put a hood or something over there, but I don't know. It's the microwave for now will be here and probably for the foreseeable future. I'm not a man of great action. I believe you know that about me. So yeah, it might take me 6 to 12 months to get a new microwave.
I think I told you I replaced one of those by myself one time.
I'm not going to do that.
It was, and I had to replace it for the same reason you did. The keyboard shorted out because the boiling water over the stove, you know,
what a piece of shit design.
Yeah, terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Whoever didn't figure that or like account for that should be fired and strung up and ran out of the country, probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just a horrible design. Why would you do that?
Even if you're related to me. All right, folks, listen, it was fun. We're a little bit of a shorter show tonight because we got a time crunch on getting it in. But, man, I cannot tell you how much we appreciate everybody for listening and watching. I can't tell you how much we appreciate Sean Callahan for coming on and wasting his time with us bums. We do appreciate it. And we'll see you next Monday.
Get you some sandwiches.
Arr, arr. Arr.